Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. You took photographs depicting how you see change in the city. You saw change in buildings, bikes, and even wigs. Well, we created a slideshow of your work and submitted it to the Slide Luck Pot Show. Whew, say that three times fast. At McCarran Park Pool last weekend. To see the slideshow of your work, go to WNYC.org and click on the Brian Lehrer Show. The FBI has closed its investigation of the 2001 anthrax attacks, and it made public the evidence against Dr. Bruce Ivins, the Army microbiologist accused of killing five people with anthrax through the mail. But there can never be a trial against Ivins because he killed himself last month. Now U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Taylor says he's confident the evidence against Ivins would have been enough to make the case in court. Joining us to talk about the details of the case is WNYC senior reporter Bob Henley. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
So what was some of the evidence the FBI released against Bruce Ivins?
The FBI had been able to recreate Dr. Ivins' mental health history. They were also able to reconstruct with some precision the record of hours that he put in the special lab isolation area at the Fort Detrick facility. And they were able to make a rough call area between his extra hours that he had a hard time explaining. He was only able to say that he had trouble at home, intimating he had difficulty with his family, and that's why he was putting extra hours in. But the spike in those hours came right before we were hit with these anthrax letters. And then also they were able to discuss, but not really share in detail, new DNA evidence that they had developed subsequent to the anthrax attacks, which created, if you will, according to the FBI, a genetic fingerprint that was able to hone in on exactly the flask of anthrax that Ivins had access to.
Well, isn't this evidence, though, mostly circumstantial? You know, these email messages and these comments that he made explaining where he was and why he was doing what he's doing?
Yes, it is. It is circumstantial. They do not, for instance, have the, if you will, easy pass documentation of his trips from his home in Maryland up to New Jersey. They have blanks in his schedule that could account for it. There's allegations he rolled back the mileage on his car, but it is circumstantial. I think the thing that's really being missed here, though, while the FBI says that there is no accomplice, I would submit to you that from what we've seen now, the accomplice may have been the mental health system, which revealed itself very much like it did in Virginia Tech with that troubled college student who gave every bit of sign to the public that there were problems, and yet for whatever reason, we have a trouble negotiating issues of privacy, liberty, mental illness, and potential criminality, even when the consequences are significant. And then add on to that, Amy, the fact of the accountability within the national security apparatus of Dr. Ivins' early signals about having his difficulty psychologically, but still having access to this serious weaponry.
Well, let's break that apart a little bit here. Let's talk about signs of his instability. He wrote an email message in July 2000 saying, paranoid man works with deadly anthrax, predicting what a National Enquirer headline might say if he agreed to participate in a study on his work. He also wrote in another message to a colleague, I wish I could control the thoughts in my mind. Tell me more. Was he seeking help for psychological problems?
He was seeking help. It was kind of a patchwork response, as is so often the case. The other thing that has to be looked at here is that he was also pursuing private sector work at the same time, which I think needs to be examined. He was pursuing a really high-profile patent over an antidote for anthrax, and even the initial work he had done for the government was coming under controversy, and he was getting pushback on it, so he was an individual under stress. I mean, we do have to look at the tremendous irony here, very sad irony, that the United States, went to Iraq to get control over weapons of mass destruction. Well, we couldn't keep control over the ones we were making here with taxpayer dollars. I mean, that is really where Congress has to start focusing.
Well, why wasn't his mental condition caught in a background check? Or, I mean, he was a career Right. Microbiologist in the Army, right? He was there for, what, 13
right.
years over, or something like that?
Exactly, like a lifelong career.
Could this have developed since his hiring? And how would the government know that one of their top scientists, microbiologists
right.
working with anthrax was becoming paranoid and delusional?
The Washington Post, which has done a great job on this, was able to go back to, you know, his college days and show a kind of narrative line. Ironically, it is the FBI's responsibility to do these background checks. And one of the things that's perhaps most troubling about this is since our initial response to the attack coming after 9/11, remember also the media here was a victim of this, so I think we, kind of like the Stockholm Syndrome, we identified with whatever the government was telling us without being too, you know, pressing the, you know, back a bit. There is the whole question of what kind of cooperation did the FBI have from the Department of Defense? That's another thing that really needs to be examined closely.
So, and colleagues, any indication that colleagues were troubled by what they were hearing from Dr. Ivins, and that they went to supervisors and said, this guy needs some help?
Well, there was actually, of course, the high-profile case of a colleague, I guess, microbiologist Hatfield, who was the person of interest, who ended up settling with the FBI for, I think, $5.8 million because he evidently was victimized initially, and they continued to push. And that's one of the things Congressman Holt wants to look at, Rush Holt from New Jersey, is why did the FBI continue to pursue Hatfield when it's clear from the internal documentation that Ivins was in their sight? That has to be sorted out. The other thing is, to be fair, we do have to, you know, the lawyer for Bruce Ivins continues to insist that his client is innocent. And there are more than a few individuals speaking up on his behalf. And the problem is that the government has so botched this job that we're stuck with this kind of ambivalence at the end. While many of the victims who had an opportunity to see this stuff yesterday, people who were lost family members who were dealing with a chronic health condition, said they felt confident that the FBI was close, these questions will persist. And, you know, his lawyer still does not give up his late mm-hmm. client's innocence.
Mm-hmm. Amy Eddings sitting in for Brian Lehrer, speaking with WNYC's Bob Henley on the latest developments in the FBI's attempt to solve the 2001 anthrax attacks. Bob, the idea that Dr. Bruce Ivins was emotionally disturbed and also working with deadly anthrax spores calls into question the security of these labs, the kind of background checks the federal government is doing on the people who are working with this substance. Since the attacks, the government has spent $50 billion on ramping up bioweapons research.
Exactly.
But that means more staff members have access to deadly toxins. What are the implications for national
security?
It's
worse than that, because what's happened is it's kind of like, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And that immediate response after 9/11, like, they're plotting out there, we're fighting them there so they don't come here. We ramped up, and as you correctly said, I think it's even maybe $57 billion, creating 300 different laboratories in all different kinds of setting, universities, private sector, government, with 14,000 employees. Is now able to do this. So we have proliferated, if you will, the risk to the American population without doing the kind of critical security work. Because clearly, here, Dr. Ivins had access to this stuff long after it was clear that he had issues.
The government's oversight of its bioweapons lab is under increased congressional scrutiny. What do you think is going to come of this? What can Congress do to make sure something similar won't happen again?
I think it's to require accountability and to make sure that, you know, that there's somebody certainly who, loses their job over it, and that there's a national reconsideration about what we really mean by security. I mean, unfortunately, we have this blind spot for things within our country. You know, if you're a person of a Mideastern appearance, you know, there's a benefit of the doubt against you. If you're, you know, a white male scientist who volunteers at the local church, why, you couldn't be a terrorist. And as we saw with the McVeigh instance, you know, we have those blind spots at our peril.
Bob, one last question. Was the FBI's pursuit of Dr. Ivins out of the ordinary?
Well, I would have to have been on the inside of that to tell you. I think that certainly the fact that they had to develop science and technology that didn't exist before made it out of the ordinary. The fact for such a long period of time that they were not able to solve the largest bioweapons attack on the U.S. really put the heat on them. And, of course, the very public mishandling of the Hatfield matter really added to the pressure. So it's clear that there needs to be a major almost, like 9/11 commission review, if you will, of the role of the FBI and the biodefense establishment in terms of, because they really have some significant explaining to do. I mean, they really put the country through a tremendous ordeal that cost hundreds of millions of dollars and people's lives.
I know Rush Holt is asking for that, but is there any serious attempt to call a committee into session to take a look at this?
I still think that it really hasn't percolated. We're still dealing with the details of it and trying to nail down. There's hundreds of documents that are still being posted by the FBI, so it will take some time. And I think it's really up to the media to really start asking the hard questions that they failed to ask for years when it comes to the question of who keeps an eye on the minders.
Bob, a follow-up here. It's been, what, 7 years since these attacks? This has percolated for a long, long time with tantalizing leads coming and going. What is the role of the relationship between the FBI and the Pentagon in what's dragged this out for so long?
Well, and that's what would have to be certainly pulled out in the congressional hearings. That would be because those are two areas. I mean, both the DOD and the FBI are not known for their openness. And, you know, so as a result, especially when it has to do with casting aspersions on their own command and control mechanism. So, and quite frankly, I'm very disappointed this hasn't been raised in the presidential campaigns. I mean, they continue to talk about campaign ads and very superficial stuff. The fact that this hasn't become like the top issue that's being discussed really talks about how far we have to go for issues to really matter. I mean, this is, you can't imagine anything more significant than the government keeping the public safe from the weapons defense research it's doing. And when the government falls down on that job, you have some really critical questions.
Speaking of the presidential campaign, I believe you're down in, with John McCain, right?
Oh, not with John McCain, but I'm down at the national headquarters here in Virginia, and we're preparing a piece on what's going on behind the scenes here. It's a great day to be down here.
What's the main focus of the piece?
Well, we have a number of New Jersey, Mike Duhaime, of course, who folks from New Jersey will recognize as a political operative who's handled many campaigns in New Jersey as a political director. There were a number of New Jersey, Bill Stepien and Steve Schmidt, a number of key people that are from New Jersey that are ironically at the top of the McCain campaign. And Amy, they insist New Jersey's in play.
Okay. More to be revealed from WNYC's Bob Henley joining us by phone from where in Virginia?
Arlington.
Arlington.
McCain Central.
McCain Central. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Coming up, 8808. Tomorrow could be your lucky day. Find out why. Stay with us.